Hello, Peter Lynham.
Hello, how are you going today?
Good.
Not bad.
And yourself?
Excellent. No, very good, actually. Very good after all the humidity of the last few days. Nice to be back to normal weather.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and so far, so good as far as Omicron is concerned. But yeah. I guess you and me, we're all holding our breath and wondering what will happen.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Now, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke about the Korean Buddhist, or is he Vietnamese?
The Vietnamese Buddhist, the great practitioner, great Korean Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And in the process, up came the topic of Chinese Buddhism.
Yes.
And I have really enjoyed digging around and making sure I fully understand, and I'm not sure I never ever will fully understand, the richness of Chinese Buddhism. You understand that, I mean, under communism, Chinese Buddhism has had a pretty hard time.
Mm-hmm. But have all religions in China had a hard time under communism?
They did it certainly under from the Great Leap Forward, and mm-hmm. especially the Cultural Revolution. All religions were heavily suppressed.
Yes.
And only after the death of Mao did religion have a chance to revive. And at that point, quite a lot of emphasis was put on Taoism mm-hmm. as the truly Chinese religion.
Yes. Just quickly, Peter, yep. did religion in China sort of flourish in the more rural areas over the, you know, like over the time when it was illegal, per se?
No, I don't. Well, I suppose certainly there were pockets of China where it was easier to practice.
Mm.
But remembering that the village meeting was regularly used to denounce people and of undertaking suspicious or bad behavior.
Okay.
And that many of the young Maoists went to the villages and joined enthusiastically in those condemnations even initiated them. You see, it was pretty dangerous.
It was just a fun thing to do at the village meeting. It was always a bit of a downer at the village meeting.
That's right, yes. And in some ways, I think you might have had more success, quiet, private, home practice
mm-hmm.
in the city
okay.
than it would be possible in the village. You're just too exposed in the village.
Yes.
How written is this to learn? Would it be sort of handed down from generation to generation in a verbal sense, or ancient texts?
Most of the religions of China are strongly textually based. Mm-hmm. You know, they have, you know, works like the I Ching and great traditions. So that's the Tao. And then for Buddhist literature, the Buddhist literature is vast. I'm not sure that anybody could fully study it all.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of literature. But then at the popular level, I don't imagine that the literature was the key aspect of Buddhism. It would be just one or two ideas that people would attach themselves to. So that was where you'd have to be pretty careful. You practice in private, and so you might meditate in private, but reading the literature would have to be done with great, great care. So, you know, all of these religions have a huge history. Buddhism came into China, it's thought, in about the 3rd century after Christ. And there's a lot of uncertainty about the precise date. There's some fantastic stories about this. And it arrived in a land where Taoism and popular primitive religion was very common. And initially, there was one great monastery, the Daolin Monastery, which still exists. Astonishing, it's existed for, can you imagine, it's 17 centuries. As the place that spread Buddhism throughout China. And of course, it went from there, from China to Korea and Japan as well. So it became a huge spreading thing, but it's spread with its own particular emphases. And I don't want to give you a lecture. That would be a bit dull.
It's very interesting.
But the intriguing thing is, two quite different strands, and bearing in mind that you've also got Tibetan Buddhism, which is something else again, but then Tibet is not part of China in the way I'm defining the Chinese, current communist Chinese would disagree. So there's Pure Land Buddhism, and there's Chan Buddhism, which is what becomes in Japan Zen Buddhism, and has become very popular in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Zen Buddhism is the easiest to define because it's a series of practices. So it's a practice of meditation, of reflection on oneself, an attempt to dissolve the self of its self-consciousness, and to find absorption into the one and into the eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So that has become very popular in Western communities as well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Pure Land Buddhism really interests me because in Pure Land Buddhism, they develop a quite distinctive method. Even this, mind you, is somewhat similar and probably originated from India in the first instance, when the monks came across the Himalayas to deliver Buddhism to China. And so Pure Land Buddhism imagines a perfect world, the Pure Land, that is not in this world. And so there needs to be some way to reach this Pure Land. So in very sharp difference to traditional Buddhism, it conceives of an act of faith and meditation and repetition of the true name of the Buddha, that one might enter the Pure Land and thus achieve immortality. So it's very otherworldly focused, and in a way it's reached by faith. You know, you stretch out, and the worst misbehavior, which of course in traditional Buddhism it's that cycle of repetition that you're trying to escape, Well this offers, if you like, a shorthand way to get there through perfect meditation. And you don't need to become a perfect person. You don't need to go up the hierarchy of the chain of being, gradually being reborn into a higher state. You may, in fact, enter that perfect Buddha state.
Pure Land.
Yes.
Is this achieved upon death, or could you do it when you're just? Are you doing it when you're alive? You're having another real minute prayer type session, and then you just all of a sudden you're in the Pure Land, just cruising around on like a Segway.
There is quite a lot of focus in Pure Land Buddhism about how you die, and that you will be with the right state. And some of these descriptions seem slightly odd to us, you know, sort of how hot the head is when you die, what's the last part of the body to grow cold, and such things. But the essence of it, you're well on the way to getting there long before you're dead. Now, something needs to be explained here. In India and in the parts of the world where traditional, the original Buddhism were practiced, in Sri Lanka and in Myanmar and the like, Buddhist monks are mendicants. That's to say, they don't have any money. They go out and they beg their way to survive. Now, Chinese Buddhism is not like this. And anyway, such behavior would be outlawed by the communists, but it hadn't been unacceptable anyway. Chinese Buddhists have huge monasteries, and the monasteries are schools, and people study to become monks. And so
they learn quite a good deal of kung fu, don't they?
Yes, that's right, and that's why such marvelous movies exist.
Yeah.
You know, that are capable of telling the story. So,
and that's partly to do with the body and the mind being harmonious in their fitness.
You need, in some ways, to reunite the bits that have become divided.
Mm. So disciplining your body at the same time as disciplining your mind.
That's right. So Chinese Buddhism is interesting. Now,
But that's kind of interesting, right? Because like when you think about Christianity, it's not like they're going around learning any kind of like martial art to accompany the...
I feel like there's the same thread between with the Western culture of, you know, like healthy mind, healthy body, good life.
Well, you see, this is where our Vietnamese monk of last time has been so influential, because mindfulness and all those dreadful courses that you have to go on that you know, a lot of public service jobs, it seems, are doing a kind of modified form of Buddhist mindfulness practice.
So where's the martial arts, though?
No, but that's a different strand of Buddhism, you see.
Ah, right.
So the interesting thing in the popular world of China, and I mean, I better know this from the Republic of China than I do from mainland China, is that you quite often combine a certain amount of Taoism and a certain amount of Buddhism. So at the popular level, you'll blend the two, and so you will go into the Buddhist temple and you'll burn joss sticks, which is, you know, that's a weird mixture, and you will remember your ancestors and reverence your ancestors. So that Buddhism at times has combined with Taoism. Now, it hasn't always. There's been fascinating periods in Chinese history, especially under the Ming, where there was an attempt to ban Buddhism. Some emperors and
that's be so hard because you're banning it by word of mouth as well. It's not like you can turn the internet
off. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yes.
Old school banning. That's old school banning. Then you have a lot of people just extra checking everyone's vaccine passports, kind of like knocking on each other, kind of thing.
The thing is that in China, the center of any palace, for example, of the great emperors, always includes you know, the temples, and the temple is integral to the palace. So what's in the temple, and is there a Buddhist statue, or are there the Chinese virtuous ancestors portrayed, becomes really part of the way in which some emperors regarded all this Buddhist stuff as distinctly un-Chinese.
Hmm. Are you familiar with the concept of the Tao of Pu?
Yes, I've got that wonderful book.
It's a great book, isn't it? I feel like it really blows your mind on the idea behind Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. And it
teaches you a bit about the whole vibe, you know, because you're like, I get it.
But that's, of course, this is the Tao. Mm. And the Tao, as in the I Ching, you know, of the yin and yang, mm-hmm. of the...
Meant to be kind of vibe.
Of the unity of the opposites. Mm-hmm. Now, if you pursue those ideas to their logical concern, they're not Buddhist at all. You know, mm-hmm. they're very different from Buddhism.
It's a bit more cosmic.
Yes, and a bit more able to reconcile opposites than Buddhism does, because Buddhism, in a sense, dissolves all things, whereas the yin and the yang assumes the unity of all things.
Right.
You know, and there are no straight lines, that everything is curved.
Yeah, action, reaction.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, the other thing to bear in mind is that when we see the people protesting in the streets of Auckland or wherever...
Well, Wellington at the moment.
I wasn't thinking of that protest. I was thinking of those that the Chinese... This is a Buddhist sect, but it is not straight Buddhism. You know, it's a very distinct... How would we say, a sect that follows a particular person who's about the practices of devotion. And so we've got to be careful, because not everything that looks Buddhist is Buddhist.
Are they obviously banished from China in some way? Is that what they're...
Oh, yes, because this has come about very much... with a manual of how you should do things, which has become highly politicized. And so even if in heart it doesn't seem political, I've read the manual, and it doesn't seem political to me, but it emerges as an opposition sect which has tight loyalties, and therefore is very, very disturbing to the Chinese, because, you know, Chinese is like an old Chinese empire. Mm. Everything that's not of us is a risk to us.
Mm. Classic.
Peter, we've had an interesting text in regards to Buddhism, Christianity slash Western religion is dangling the carrot. Buddhism, etc., is eating and being at one with the carrot.
How are you going to eat it and be one with it?
Yes. The only thing is that
there is no carrot.
It isn't the matrix. Carrot. Yes. Precisely. That's the thing. The carrot is far too
thin. Don't try and bend the carrot. That's impossible.
So, rather, you have to be at one with the essence of carrotness.
Know that you don't like carrot and leave the carrot alone. I think that's really where you're
That's an alternative approach.
Peter, know that the carrot used to be purple as well.
Peter, I feel like we haven't even really scratched the surface on this at all.
No way. How could us silly dum-dums scratch this at all, any surface at all? But it was nice listening to you talk for a little while, Peter Lynam.
Yes, but for ordinary Chinese, the way you learn is by practicing. Mm. The way you learn is by getting the feet wet, by trying to compose the mind, by working out if you're going to follow the chants of Zen Buddhism, or by reflecting on where is the pure land, and by seeking to aspire to the pure land, as in Pure Land Buddhism. So the Chinese would always say, well, we begin with just trying out, and that's how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Classic. Give it a hoon.
Yes, there we are.
Thank you very much, Peter. Always a pleasure, mate. We'll catch you next week.
Next time. Bye.
Brilliant.